network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have a busy morning show for you today on Indictment Day. We're going to hear from the State Committee of the Green Party of New York State that met in Troy this week and is talking about its political future now that the Democrats in New York have basically banned it from the ballot. We're also going to hear WGXC's Kieran Riley talk with environmental artist Daniel Lanzilada about the group show Kindred Spirits at the Athens Cultural Center up now through July 23rd. And his June 21st presentation, Shifting Perspectives, Turning Waste into Beauty. We'll hear from Auntie Ballas. We'll hear from Reverend Kim Singletary and update us on goings on at the Juneteenth celebration in Hudson this weekend. And retired meteorologist Hugh Johnson talks about air quality after last week's smoke in the Hudson Valley. It's all starting after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news.
My name is, and you are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM, which is true.
Wave Farms Art Park is now open on Saturdays. Drop in for unannounced guided tours on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m. or book a tour in advance on other days. Wave Farms' 29-acre campus in Accra is the home of the art park with 13 installations in the Study Center, the WGXC Accra Studio, and the Wave Farms International Artist Residency Program. Visitors on Saturdays receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free and tours typically last 60 to 90 minutes. Again, on Saturdays, Wave Farms Art Park is open for drop-in visits anytime from noon to 6 p.m. from June through October. Stop by Wave Farm on Saturdays from noon to 6 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nancy Barber and Bill Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra with the WGXC Daily News for Tuesday, June 13th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Noah Zweifel reports in the Altamont Enterprise that Rensselaerville's 2022 drinking water quality report shows high levels of TTHMs and HAA5, two chemical byproducts of the disinfection process that may cause health issues. The Rensselaerville water averaged a 69.9 micrograms per liter for TTHMs, or trihalomethanes, just below the state limit of 80 micrograms per liter. But the average reading for HAA5, or haloacetic acids 5, was 77.2, above the state limit of 60 micrograms per liter. The report also said that the Rensselaerville filtration station was not working effectively, as the average water turbidity also exceeded state limits during an August test period. The good news is that these bad numbers were worse in 2021, when the town averaged 101.15 micrograms per liter for TTHMs and 136.9 for HAA5. Ed Cusick recently took over as the town's water committee and is looking for grant money to overhaul the Rensselaerville water treatment facility. The town's water is drawn from Lake Myosotis, which is susceptible to algae blooms. Read more about this story in the Altamont Enterprise. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that the New York State Bar Association on June 12th recommended that the state no longer allow non-attorneys to be local justices and that town and village courts should be consolidated into district courts. Sherry Levin Wallach, who was the association's immediate past president, said, quote, "All the judges must have a legal education and at least 5 years of experience practicing law before taking the bench," unquote. Richard Lewis, the president of the New York State Bar Association, said, quote, "We need to continue to adapt to our changing society and improve our system so that all stakeholders, plaintiffs, attorneys, prosecutors, defense attorneys, and of course the parties can achieve justice," unquote. The state legislature would have to pass a law to make the Bar Association's changes. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. On June 12th, the Summit Lake Conservation Group filed a second Article 78 lawsuit against the Philmont Planning Board, the Board of Trustees, and the Clover Reach Partners LLC, developers of The Woods, a 22-acre subdivision of luxury homes proposed in the town. Last year, the group successfully overturned the Planning Board's first approval of The Woods with an Article 78 lawsuit. Then the Planning Board again approved the large development without adding much oversight, and so the group is suing again. A statement from the group said, quote, "The Woods luxury developments is wildly unpopular in Philmont. Lawn signs around town display the slogan, 'Save Summit Lake, Stop Clover Reach,' and 'Save the Woods, Stop the Woods.' Many residents see houses speculatively priced at $750,000 and up as a sign of gentrification and an attack on a beloved natural asset. Summit Lake's wooded viewshed has been prized by residents and visitors for generations," unquote. The group says the only change the developers promised the planning board in their second go-around was to increase the right-of-way around the loop road from 33 feet to 50 feet to accommodate a full-width road, should the village eventually decide one is needed. Quote, "This essentially kicks the cost of widening the road onto village taxpayers and skirts the responsibility of supplying accurate visual simulations to reflect the increased grading and added tree removal required to accommodate a road safe enough for multiple emergency vehicles," unquote, the group says. This has been the WGXC Daily News. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, June 13th. Local early morning temperatures range from, well, let's give it to them, 55 degrees out in Roxbury to 65 in Copaic. Regional average soil temperature is 62 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium. Today will be comfortable, too warm, with partly cloudy skies and a high of 77 at 4 p.m. Growth conditions are optimum, and it looks like a couple centimeters of rain fell at the Better Weather Outpost. So lawns are gonna take that water and turn it into chores. So get ahead of it if you can. Overnight, temperatures fall to 54 degrees. Then tomorrow, rain is back. Falls all day with chances of thunder and a high temperature of 71, happening early at 12 p.m. Rain tapers off by midnight and we get a low of 55 degrees. Thursday, rain reappears in the afternoon and we get a high of 76. Friday, wet with a high of 70. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 6:24 a.m., high tide at 11:57 a.m., and low tide once again at 6:34 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 70 degrees and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:17 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:15 a.m. Looking way up, we see solar wind speed is currently 439 kilometers per second at an average 5 protons per cubic centimeter. Long-range radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2.6. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 116, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady-o. Who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million people. That's all.
How y'all doing? Ready to praise the Lord?
Today, he is going to be a musical guest artist at the upcoming Juneteenth celebration that is being presented by the pastors and ministers and lay leaders and congregations from all around our area. With us also is our good friend, sister friend, coordinator for the Juneteenth observance, Mrs. Linda, Reverend Van Alstyne. We're going to talk about that for a few minutes, and I'm going to ask you to come off mute, and Brother Tommy, I'm going to ask you to come off mute also. We're going to hear from Linda first, and then I'm going to introduce you to the people properly, okay? So, Reverend Linda, good to see you, my friend.
You as well. You as well.
And welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes, so how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I feel well, thank you. So let's talk to the people. Let's talk a little bit about what we have coming up on June 19th.
Amen. I'm so excited. We're having a Juneteenth celebration. It's going to be held, of course, on June the 19th from 11:30 to 2:30, and it will be over at the Rothmel Park in Kinderhook. That's on 1519 Rathmel Lane in the village of Kinderhook. So I'm excited that we're going to be there representing our history and celebrating all that we have been through, the freedom that we were able to receive in Texas, Galveston, Texas in 1865. At our celebration, we're going to have a picnic. Let me back up a little bit. We're going to be honoring the fathers as well, because during that time, fathers weren't able to do the responsibilities that they're able to do now, take their rightful place as men of their households as they are now. So we're going to be honoring our fathers on that day as well. We're going to have a picnic. We're going to have there's a kiddie park over there. We're going to have a basketball. There's a basketball court, tennis court over there at the park. There's going to be games and prizes for all. We're going to be singing songs, spiritual songs, and we're going to have a special presentation over at the People of Color Cemetery. There's a People of Color Cemetery over there, and there's going to be someone coming. Her name is Lisa Flood Smith, and she'll be giving us the history of that cemetery that's over there. So we'll be going over there to give homage to our ancestors. We'll be lifting up prayers and songs. So it's going to be a good time. We're looking forward for everyone to come out. Bring your children and your families and just come and be with us as we celebrate on that day.
Well, I want to commend you. You have been doing an excellent job in putting this together. You've been putting your heart, your mind, your soul, your feet into it. And it's just exciting. And one of those persons that's going to help us make this all happen and make it memorable is with us. He is no stranger to a lot of us. He and his group, the Stars of Harmony, have been with us at several of our venues as we go from park to park around the county every summer. And so we're so delighted to have the voice that you heard at the top of this segment, creative. And I'm not going to have him give his testimony. I want him to give his testimony again, or whatever part of it he wants to share. But you need to come out and hear, because if you don't know about the power of God, if you don't think that God still does miracles, if you don't know what you believe, you need to come on out and just hear this brother's testimony. But without further ado, I want to invite to you, I see his very talented wife, but they're truly partners in work and ministry. Wherever I see her, I see him, and vice versa. Dr. Yolanda Stevens, so I acknowledge you. But Brother Tommy, we want to say hi to you and let you say hi to the listeners. How you doing today?
Hello, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Well? We hear you well, yes.
Oh, okay. We see hello, you. Listeners.
And so, yes, you're going to be, now you're going to come and you're going to share your gifts at the Juneteenth celebration, but the Stars of Harmony is going to come and be part of our event, our closing event for the summer at the Hudson Riverfront Park in September. So we're all looking forward to that. But you're doing some solo stuff, and that's what you're here to share with us. So tell us about what you're doing, sir.
Yes, I have a couple of solo videos, but it still be their songs in the background with me. So okay. I'm going to present a couple of those songs on TV track when I come.
And how long have you been singing, bro?
Oh, I've been singing most of my life. I would say at least 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And my whole family, I came up with a God-fearing family, mostly women. And we love the Lord, and I learned to love him more. Mm-hmm. So my life is definitely wrapped around Jesus and serving him first. And everything that I do, I want to dedicate it to him. Jesus the Christ.
To know him is to love him, ain't that right?
That's it.
Everything
belongs to him and from him and for him.
You know, it's such a beautiful thing when you hear men who are in love with the Lord. You know, it's such a beautiful thing. And every time I meet a man like yourself, they bring that same energy to it. It's like, you know, I love the Lord. I don't know what y'all talk about, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I have to put him first. And that way, I have that out the way.
Absolutely.
WGXC's Kieran Riley talked with environmental artist Daniel Lanzilotta about the group show Kindred Spirits that's up at the Athens Cultural Center on 2nd Street in Athens through July 23rd. And he has a related June 21st presentation there called Shifting Perspectives, Turning Waste into Beauty.
I guess the first question I would have is, being a politically conscious, aware of current events and tuned into the national phenomena or whatever the F is going on, you know, and also being this absolutely wonderful artist that uses like crazy mediums and does whatever, like, how is that for both of those situations? Like, you know what I mean? Like, to bridge that gap, if you know what I'm saying, like, you don't have a lot of art in politics. You don't have a lot of politics in art right now. And maybe that's a good thing. But, like, you're looking at a bridge.
It's a very good question. And the way I answer that question is that when you have these types of fires, and this is a fire that has given off toxic fumes, smoke, and those particulates in the air are damaging to people across the board at some level. So that those pollutants and that toxicants that are coming down and affecting our health are very democratic. They don't care who you are. And so they don't care if you're gay, straight, black, white, Arab, Jew. it doesn't care. And so what really is occurring here is that the notion of what bonds us together, all life, all human beings, all animals, all species, anything that breathes is oxygen. And so while we're arguing about race and sexual orientation and COVID and policies, really what's happening around us is diminishing our existence on a daily basis. And plastics play a gigantic role in that. Specifically, say somebody like this, a gigantic oil company that just opened up a facility in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, that is specifically been designed at $1 billion to make plastic, virgin stock plastic, because the crude oil industry knows that their time is limited because of EV development, and as batteries become more and more efficient prices drop, oil will not be the number one go-to energy source to move us around. So they're decided that plastic production will increase. And as they can make plastics cheaper, people who are using plastics for packaging or what have you, they will purchase those in greater amounts, and the public will use them in greater amounts. It's a very vicious, vicious, crazy cycle. And so in order for all of that to stop, my theory is that we as individuals have to make decisions about our own personal needs and what those personal and how they're met. So in order for that to happen, if I'm depressed and I decide to go out and buy something I don't need, well, that's trauma. And what happens to the packaging? It goes into the environment. Only 9% of plastics go in and are actually recycled. 91% of those other plastics that go into the environment are going into landfills, are being incinerated, and eventually will hit the ocean.
So you're talking about a plastics industry that, like, I remember The Graduate, like Dustin Hoffman.
Yes.
Like, Graduate, like one word for you, son. Microplastics. Plastics. And it's just so funny. It's just like, oh my God, is this what we're going to do? And like we got to stop. And so how is it for you, like being an artist and being conscious of these like very real issues about consumption? I like really like how you're focused on the consumption issue, because a lot of times we get focused on the, okay, how much energy do we need for this? We got to do alternative. It's like, well, wait a minute, what is our entire infrastructure based?
You have to look at it from an individual's experience. And then it's exponential. So if an individual human being is consuming, and at what rate they're consuming, and what is the fallout from that amount of consumption? And so where is that excessive consumption go that's not utilized as energy? that's, you know, a positive input to the body and our existence. And that's usually packaging, plastics, the popcorn type packaging that's not cornstarch based, cardboard labeling. There's also a large percentage of other artists who are out producing art, but not realizing that the materials that they're using are petrochemically based fabricated art supplies. And that becomes a very sensitive issue. Graffiti, spray paint. Spray paint is atomized plastic. It's liquid plastic. About 60% or more of that, when spray goes into the atmosphere, it atomizes. It's not, you can't see it. It's a nanoplastic. It dries immediately into the atmosphere. Why do graffiti artists wear respirators? Because they don't want to breathe plastic. So there are many aspects of the plastic world and the products that we use that are camouflaged. And so we just go blindly into going to buy stuff and waste stuff and not, you know, have any consciousness of what the impact is as an individual. And the individual is not, it's an individual making a purchase, but on a grand scale, there are hundreds of thousands and millions of people doing this all day long and accumulating hundreds of millions of cubic meters of waste that go into the ocean. So it's really about understanding what one's trauma is and why one is purchasing something. And until that realization occurs, one will have to face one's own demons, essentially. This is grassroots information. This is a grassroots endeavor that becomes exponential, and it becomes exponential very quickly. And so until the day comes where I take personal responsibility about what I'm doing and what I'm contributing to the overall insanity of what keeps reoccurring.
That's awesome, Daniel. And let's also always be reminded and not forget that the institutional like forces that contribute to climate change, one of the number one consumer of fossil fuels in the United States is the, you know who it is, drum roll please, the U.S. military. So the U.S. military, 800, 900 bases around the entire world, they're just fueling the stuff through fossil fuels, these giant C-5As.
Like exactly.
Their planes, like, they're just going nuts on the fossil fuel thing. It's like,
COVID, the medical industry.
With how long you stay in the shower, but at the same time, we're like, okay, 60% of my taxes are going towards this infrastructure that supports this fossil fuel.
Right, so collectively as individuals, have to stand up and make a demand. And the only way that demand is going to not be met by the corporations is to stop using it. That's the only way this stuff is not going to get to the ocean. And so when people talk about producer extended responsibility, in other words, a soda company makes a plastic bottle and that goes out into the world, the soda company is supposed to figure out a way to recoup that. Why are we doing that? We don't do that with anything else. And so the individual is shifting that responsibility over their lust and love for a product that is dangerous to the environment. So science and personal responsibility have to find a place, a happy place, where the formulations of plastics are become more plant-based and more available for engineering purposes, because plastics are very adaptable from an engineering point of view. It's chemistry. And so we can design anything we dream of it to be plastic. So we're talking about medical devices that are surgically implanted. They have to stand up to certain standards of wear and tear and adaptability to the bodies not rejecting those plastics. So there's many technical aspects to what needs to be occurring when we're looking at plant-based plastics. So all that engineering technical acumen has to come. Universities have to jump on board, private industry, investments, green investments. Hemp is should be looked at in a more scientific way to use these products and build a formulation so that we can start weaning ourselves off the fossil fuel stuff, because literally it's killing us. And as I said before, We are looking at rapid cycling in nature. This is intersectional kind of convergence of all kinds of crazy stuff happening all at once. And that's a very, very dangerous place to be because it's disruptive in a way that's not going to make our lives any better.
So it takes us to stay on top of it. So Daniel Lanzalata, I appreciate you producing the artwork. Can you just give us a quick plug for the art that you'll be showing in the Athens Cultural Center? I think
yes, it's there are three pieces there. There are three pieces there. Yeah. One is called Black Planet. Another piece is called COVID Warrior. And what is the other piece that's there? Yolanda Petrocelli's Mind. So those pieces are all made from harvesting plastics from environments, the ocean, street. For instance, COVID Warriors made from 100% plastics that were harvested from the streets of Harlem when I was living there during the height of COVID. And then on June 21st at 6 o'clock, I'll be giving a very interesting talk about beauty and making stuff from waste. And okay. what that all means.
There you have it right there, the announcement. Daniel Lanzalata, you have been absolutely wonderful to talk to.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
The Green Party of New York State recently held a statewide meeting in the city of Troy to discuss its future efforts now that the Democrats, unfortunately, in the state legislature changed the law to basically kill their right to be a ballot access qualified party. So, Peter, what are some of the plans that the Green Parties have in moving forward?
Thanks, Mark. One of our plans is to reorganize. We want to run candidates, especially at the local level. One of our points meeting in Troy was to get together face-to-face for the first time in 3 years. We've taken the COVID-19 pandemic very seriously, and we thought it was time to talk about where we're going to run candidates, how we're going to run candidates. We're going to challenge the system. The Democrats and Republicans have made it very hard to do that here in New York State at the state level, but you know, we've been very successful in the past running state candidates. That's part of it. Also, we're looking at being very involved in different issue campaigns, continuing what we've already done in terms of climate change and the environmental movement, public power, you know, talking about the Green New Deal, you know, issues that you know, Greens have been involved in or are going to continue to be involved with, things like single-payer health care that aren't being addressed in the state by the Democrats or Republicans. So we're here to brainstorm and to, you know, kind of commit ourselves to being the real left alternative here in New York State.
Now, as we talked on Saturday, the State Assembly was finishing up its work for the year. State Senate finished up Friday night. You know, what is sort of the Green assessments of, you know, how well the Democrats did now that they control, you know, both houses and the governorship in terms of, you know, passing legislation to deal with critical issues here in New York?
It's a continuing problem. The Democrats passed a very bad budget this year. You know, we got very few kind of progressive reforms. There was a rollback of the bail laws. The campaign finance laws got demonstrably worse. The ones that they claimed they needed to kick us off the ballot got worse. You know, there was the clean slate proposal that passed, but it's a very weak version of the bill. The
clean slate for people with employment records, I'll have to say that they have previously been incarcerated.
That's correct. The public power bill that passed was a very weak version of the bill that was being championed over the last couple of years by different you know, public power groups in the state, including the Greens. The budget is not good, and you know, this is what we've got to show for years and years now of Democrats being in control of the entire state government. We just can't really seem to get this legislation passed. So that's why we really do need a green alternative.
What are some of the different climate issues that, say, the Greens would enact as opposed to what the Democrats have been able to pass?
We were one of the first to talk about the Green New Deal, right? I mean, they passed a public power bill. We believe really what they passed was getting NYPA, to potentially be able to cite public power. We want public power.
NYPA's New York Power Authority.
They're going to be able to. There's, you know, different aspects of the bill. but we want real public power, right? We want the state to go out and build, and we want to allow them to take over, you know, the transmission lines and municipalities to run their own renewable energy projects. That's not in the bill. We'd be much stronger. We want to move to 100% renewable energy very quickly. We believe it needs to happen by 2030. That's not there. You know, things, you know, like essentially building up an infrastructure that allows for renewable energy, mass transit all across the state, reducing energy usage as well. We need to do that. You know, we are extraordinarily different from the Democrats because we also talk about the need for a just transition, right? So that people who are working class not only can have jobs in this sector, living wage jobs, but they're provided publicly, and that those who need help and assistance you know, potentially afford for transitional things like batteries, electric cars, access to mass transit, you know, retrofitting homes, get that. You know, that's not what's in any of these Democratic bills, unfortunately.
New York and the United States are one of the few so-called democracies on the planet that does not use what is called proportional representation, where, say, if you get 10% of the vote, you get 10% of the seats in the state legislature or the city council. And right now, so many liberals, progressives are so scared about, you know, what Donald Trump represents. How do the Greens in the United States operate under a situation where so many people, where the country is so polarized?
That's a really good question. You know, the Democrats here in this state have made it very difficult for Greens or anybody else to run independently. They continue to make it harder. And you're right. There's been a lot of polarization in this country. So one of the things that we do is run at the local level. I think that's really important. Push for electoral reform. Here we're pushing for ranked choice voting and single transferable vote. And to show that when you elect a Democrat, you are getting a corporate-controlled, you know, a politician, someone here in New York State that refuses to pass progressive legislation, even though they claim to be very different from Republicans. When it comes down to it, they pass budgets like you get here in New York or at the national level, this debt deal, which is austerity, that Biden very happily shook hands with McCarthy on. So only the Greens really offer an alternative. And I think as we talk to people, we find that they're very disappointed by Democrats, even when they claim to be not Republicans. That's really all they have. They don't have much more of a platform. So we need a positive change, and we need the Greens.
You know, some voters may say, hey, I like what the Green Party stands for. I agree with you on the issues, but I can't see you winning elections. I got to vote for the Democrats to defeat the Republicans. You know, what does the Green Party offer voters, including young people?
We offer them a real alternative. We are an eco-socialist party that supports the Green New Deal. We support single-payer health care. We're anti-war. We're anti-imperialist. You know, we support reparations. We support grassroots democracy. You know, these are positive things. And when you vote for the lesser evil, you're voting for evil still. We've said that for years, right? And here in New York State, very specifically, if you want to change, look, you need to vote for a party like the Greens that is going to provide an alternative vision. If you look at what happens when people simply vote for the Democrats, what you get is you know, a corporate party that gets in there and says, we're not Republicans, and then they proceed to do almost everything that Republicans are going to do on the issues, right? That's all you get, and you get this you know, terrible outcome where nothing really changes, right? Except that there's not a Republican in office.
So one of the reasons the Greens met in Troy the past weekend was to talk about, you know, are there future directions for the Green Party in New York to take, particularly with this loss of ballot status? I know it's a work in progress, but any themes emerging for, you know, future actions by the Greens?
Yeah, I'd say in a couple aspects. One, you know, we're going to be much more visible in social movements and movement protests, things like climate change, labor issues, anti-war issues. You're going to see us out there, and you're going to see us taking the lead on these issues. Two, you know, we are going to be committed as a left-wing party dealing with climate change. Like I said, we committed a number of years ago to being an eco-socialist party. You know, we believe we have to move beyond capitalism to deal with the climate issue, and we believe that you can't talk about an alternative kind of society without really dealing with it, with a climate issue as well. And we're, you know, going to commit to being a party of activists, right? So that what we can offer as an alternative is not just a party that puts people up for office, but people who are both candidates and active in different social movement issues.
So we only have a minute left. You're actually a college professor, so I'll throw a young person's question. What are they looking for at this point in terms of political change?
My students, and I would suspect students around the country, are looking for a political organization that represents their values, you know, so values on things, you know, cultural values, you know, dealing with climate change, they're terrified about what's going to happen in their lifetimes, that talks about economic issues and pressures that they're facing, things like debt and jobs that pay well, rent. They're looking for a party like the Greens. And when I talk to them about the Greens or other political parties that aren't Democrats or Republicans, they respond and they're very interested because they're sick to death of the two corporate parties that are in there.
Peter Lavigne, co-chair, Green Party of New York State, GPNY.org. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
So Hugh Johnson, retired National Weather Service meteorologist, is back with us this week. But it's a pre-recorded segment. Hugh, where are you?
I'm in a place called Montanoy City, just southwest of Hazleton in upstate Pennsylvania. But I will be later today, I'll be heading down to Maryland.
And what's the weather like quickly in Pennsylvania, in Harrisburg? Well,
this morning it was cloudy. It had a little dirty air, but not the smoke that we've had. And showers are encroaching the area from the west.
Did that area... They got a lot of smoke from the Canadian wildfires, right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, well, the ground zero, the worst air quality was just south of here in the Susquehanna Valley, which is about an hour south of here. I think they had values off the chart, you know, well over 400, the AQI.
So the AQI is the air quality index. And it sounds like above whatever 100 is bad, but what's good? How do we understand the AQI?
Okay, very good question, Bria. Air quality air index was an index developed actually not that long ago in the late 90s. It was refined anyways, and it measures five particular things that are really problematic to the lungs: ozone, carbon monoxide, and smoke particulates, which is what we were dealing with last week. So it's basically a function of milligrams per cubic yard. And when you have numbers that are under 50, in that particular sample of anything, a complete total, you're good. Your air quality is good. You can breathe. No one's going to have any problem. They shouldn't have any problems. Of course, that does not include in pollen. Pollen is a separate issue. So that's something to consider. You've seen the pollen count being off the chart too with the dry weather we've had. But when you get over 50, you're in the moderate range from 50 to 99. Most of us are fine with that. But if you're extremely sensitive, if you're very asthmatic, you might have a little issue with that range. So it's something to keep an eye on. And I remember as a kid in the Philadelphia area, my lungs hurting by the end of the day. I was in the high end of moderate. So that's an area, if you have a particular respiratory issues, you still should pay attention. Now, when it hits 100, that's where it becomes basically unhealthy for sensitive groups, for people who have asthma or other respiratory issues. You really shouldn't be strenuously exercising. You should be staying indoors as much as possible. The rest of us, basically okay, but keep in mind that you might have a little irritation. I did when I biked on Tuesday, but it turned out that the values hit 150 when I was out biking. And now we're talking about unhealthy. And that's when you're in the red. It's basically unhealthy for everyone to be outside strenuously exercising, regardless of who you are. Now, I've known people that went out and said, that's no big deal, but it is a big deal.
So where's the cutoff between unhealthy for sensitive people and getting in the red where it's unhealthy for everyone?
150 for most people. You know, if you have lungs of steel or something, maybe you're okay. But for most people, 150, you really shouldn't be going out much.
And how bad did it get in the Albany area?
I saw 203, which, you know, is basically pushing into even the next level, which is unhealthy for even just being outdoors, not even any exercise. The chart goes up to 500. That's as high as it goes. And there were places that were in the 300s in Pennsylvania. Where I'm at now was close to 300, and south of here, we're in the 300s to 400. sheer way the week's jet stream was doing, it was pointing it towards Pennsylvania. And then there was an inversion down there, I think, that enhanced it. Inversion being that it's cooler temperatures near the ground, warmer aloft kind of thing. So it kind of hit that area and it just kind of stuck there. So that was ground zero. It wasn't us, thankfully, but we got it bad enough. And it was funny, at one point, it was clear air up in New England, closer to the fires than it was here at one point, again, because of this blocked circulation. Had we had a normal pattern, it wouldn't have been so bad. We probably would have gotten much less smoke. But this happened in 21, but not to the same extent. And it also happened in 2002 for a day or two. But this last one event was one that was the worst I've ever seen around here.
Do we think it's becoming the new normal to have that blocking pattern, or is it just luck of the draw each year?
No, I think there is some truth that it could be a new normal, not always, but trending that way, because with climate change, so we've talked about this before, the jet stream generally weakens because the Arctic is warming the fastest relative to warming, and that allows a weaker jet stream, allows more of these blocky type patterns. You're still getting these cool intrusions of air, but without a strong jet stream to really help push it along. So yeah, it could very well be the new norm. And speaking of cutoff lows, we're going to be dealing with them this week. Now, unfortunately, not the smoke, but we're actually going to get some rain, which we need. But we're going to have a couple of block cutoff lows in the next week to 10 days to deal with.
So cutoff lows will do what again?
Well, they'll basically fall in the atmosphere, and they'll do things like if there's fires, they'll just kind of spin the smoke around, not disperse it, won't push it out further out to sea. And also, they don't move fast. So this block cutoff low is going to start, the first installment is tonight. And then when the actual cutoff low goes over, we'll get another shot Wednesday of rain. And then we'll have another cutoff low coming in for the weekend, it looks like.
So for the next few days, it looks like we're going to have rain off and on. Will it get heavy or just be occasional? Yeah,
it could be convective elements in this rain. It could be some thunderstorms and some heavy rain. I think it's going to be more widespread than what we saw last week. Remember, last week we got these little showers. I think it's going to be a little more widespread. And I think a lot of us could end up with an inch or more. It won't happen all at one time, but when it does, it's going to come down pretty hard. But over the week, I think we're going to do okay.
So I want to do a shout out to a radio station down in Greene and Columbia County that airs your weather segments. How will the weather be affected farther down in the Hudson Valley?
You mean from this system coming up?
Yeah, for the next week.
Pretty much the same deal. I mean, you know, give or take a few points of temperature. We're going to see the showers tonight, tomorrow, ending probably in the morning. So tomorrow's not a complete washout. Wednesday, more showers, thunderstorms, and then again, possibly on the weekend. So yeah, pretty much the same deal.
And then we've talked about the fires in Canada. How's it looking for the possibility of fires in our area? Not just the smoke, but the actual fires. Do we have a lot of the dried out, built up fuel?
Absolutely. I think luckily we haven't had any dry lightning, which is pretty rare anyways in the East, and we just haven't had any. But now we're going to start getting rain and higher humidity. That risk will fortunately go down. So the rain this week is actually going to be beneficial. You know, I'm not a big fan of rainy days, but, you know, we need a longer extended period of rain to help get the grass green and get the timber back to where it's normally, so it won't be as combustionable. So that's a good thing.
Any final, hurricane season. So we've got the rains and the fires, but what about these hurricanes?
Well, we've already had one tropical storm, Arlene, down the Gulf, no big deal. I think it brought some rain to Florida, but the projection is to be near normal. We got the El Nino, which will help increase shear in the Atlantic Ocean, which will help to prevent storms from becoming hurricanes, you know, thunderstorm clusters. But the monsoon season in Africa is above normal. It looks like that's going to be active. And the Atlantic's warm, so that kind of negates the El Nino. So if it weren't for those two factors, we'd be below normal, but we'll probably be pretty close to normal. And it's not going to be any hurricane could become very powerful. And no one should let their guard down, especially down in Florida, because it's going to be more. It still gives you about a dozen named storms a year. So, you know, and any one of those could become very powerful and destructive.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Hugh. It's been great talking with you. I appreciate you taking time from your vacation to talk with me. And again, this is retired National Weather Service meteorologist Hugh Johnson talking with me, Bria Barthel, for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Rick Collin reports in the Times Union that this week the state Senate declined to take a vote on Governor Kathy Hochul's nomination of New York Power Authority acting president and CEO Justin E. Driscoll to permanently take over the position. For now, Driscoll will remain in the position in an acting role. This is the second major nomination defeat for Hochul this year, as the Senate voted 39-20 against her nomination of Appellate Justice Hector de la Salle to lead the state Court of Appeals. In this case, progressive senators, backed by climate activists and the SEIU 1199 labor union, said they thought Driscoll was too close to the fossil fuel industry to become the chief of the state's largest power producer. Public Power NY, an activist group that opposed Driscoll's nomination, in a statement said, and I quote, "New Yorkers realized we need far more visionary leadership to pave the way. Justin Driscoll is not that nominee to lead NYPA for the good and the future of NYPA. Justin Driscoll must resign immediately as we search in earnest for a leader who has a history of negotiating in good faith with labor, fighting for environmental justice." End quote. Activists did not like that Driscoll previously worked as a lobbyist at Brown and Weinraub, which has relationship